Independent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evident Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, everyone, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com, as Wesley Snipes says. Actually, he says .com. He sings it. It is April the 18th on the East Coast, but on the West Coast, it is still April the 17th. That confuses a lot of people. In a couple of hours, you'll catch up to us, and that should explain it. I had some interesting days this past week in my research and in some of my communications with friends, and I want to give some shout-outs here to Karen, Bob, and Bill, David Crenshaw, Zachariah, Sheila, Sylvia, and Jill, and the General, as well as Michael, and there's another name I'm forgetting. Who is it I'm forgetting? Well, I have to say hi to Chris. We have a new sponsor. I'm in the process of putting together the spots for Ron Paul flags. And if you, in the next few days, go to directlightproductions.com, my website, you'll be able to see the link to ronpaulflags.com, or you can go there directly and get a Ron Paul flag. Ron Paul is not out of the race, unlike what the media would like you to believe. And some things may happen. He may just get into the presidency. It'll be surprising what might happen here. And I just urge everyone to use your discernment and don't take my word for it, but do some checking. Oh, also, I want to say hi to Michael in Arizona. I spent a little bit of time on Michael's show this afternoon and earlier in the week, and we had some interesting discussions, and we're going to be actually talking about some of the same things tonight. We had talked about the Patriot Movement. That's not what we're talking about tonight, but the reality of working outside the box and discerning things that are really controlling your life and have been most of your life, at least on your conscious level, whatever level that is. And we were talking about vibrations, and we were talking about the synchronicities of people getting together and communicating with one another and feeling what each other is feeling and honoring what each person brings to the table. And there were some very, very interesting calls that went into the show, and you could hear and see that there was healing going on, that people were coming to a higher consciousness. And that's a good thing. And believe it or not, it was over a 9/11 video that had come out, a more recent one. And the producer of the film, Sophia Smallstorm, was being interviewed, and she was taking the spiritual approach to dealing with these things. So we're going to go a little bit further than that with tonight's guest. She has been on Evident Footprints twice, and by popular demand, she is back again. She has a book that she has written called The Call, and it's posted on my website on the books page, and there's a link to her website as well, which is www.sacredspaceswa.com. And also, there's another website, www.angelichuman.com. And tonight's guest is the person responsible for those websites, Tony Elizabeth Sarapetrinovich. Good evening, Tony. How are you?
Hi, Don. I am fine. Thank you. It sounds like you've had an exciting week.
I did. It was exciting. It's even more exciting tonight because you're on the show.
Oh, thank you very much. I was musing before we got on the call about what I wanted to talk about tonight. And it's interesting that you brought up Ron Paul, and it's interesting that you brought up people looking at 9/11 from a spiritual standpoint, because what I wanted to talk about a little bit has something to do with that, and yet we can take it into a more personal level. One of the things that's really been popping up for me in the last few weeks, it's in synchronistically, you know, as you were saying, it's been with clients, it's been with things that I've seen on television, things I've heard in different media, and it has to do with people desiring to be something, and their desire to be it is stopping it from happening because their ego gets so caught up in it. And I know that this is something that probably every listener understands on some level. And yet if you take it to another level, where if you take it into that spiritual realm, it seems like when people get there in their thought patterns, they don't think that that applies. So if somebody says, I want to be a really good healer, like I was talking to a woman the other day, and she said, I just really want to be a really good healer and help all the people who are in pain and make everybody feel good. So we got into talking about why she wanted to do that. And when we got down to the bottom line, it was really about making herself feel good and making herself feel better rather than looking at it from the whole standpoint of, or the idea of why those people are experiencing whatever they're experiencing, and how our ego personalities get stuck in thinking that doing something to change something is only for the others when it's also for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was talking with a friend today, she was telling me, and this I didn't see this, so I was really interested in hearing about it, that Marie Schreiber was on Oprah. And that's, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger's wife, you know, the Kennedy lady. And she was on Oprah talking about the fact that she is not happy, that she did not ask to come to Earth to be a Kennedy. She did not want to be a politician's wife. She wants to be out of the limelight, and she really doesn't want people to see her the way they see her. She wants to be who she really is.
And did she say, I won't be back?
No, she didn't. Well, I don't know. I didn't see it, but the lady didn't say that she said that. The lady I was talking to.
Well, that was Arnold's line. It was, I'll be back. You know?
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
And she said, I won't be back.
And I was thinking, well, maybe by osmotically she can influence Arnold. I don't know. Except that it was just such a pronouncement by somebody who's in the public eye of what I was thinking about and what I've been talking about with so many people. And it kind of took me back to when I was teaching Red Cross classes. I used to teach for the Red Cross, and I would teach people before they'd go out on these, you know, excursions to help the people in the floods and the this and the that. And the first thing I wanted to do was disabuse them of the idea that they were going out there for the other people, because they really aren't. They're doing it for themselves. It makes them feel good. It's altruistic.
Yes.
And it makes you feel good. And if you can get past that and realize that it's really all about you, then you can really, really, really enjoy what you're doing, so that you don't get caught up in feeling like I'm doing this for somebody else, whatever the this is, and being disappointed when they don't react or they don't get healed of such, you know, such and such. Like you were just said, healing happened while you were on the talk show with that person. You were having a discussion with that person. On a totally different subject, and yet you could feel healing happening. But you weren't trying to make that happen. You were simply talking. So it isn't, it's removing the need to make something happen, which is only satisfying the ego personality, and letting it occur in the normal stream of events. So we can take that whole idea, and we can, you know, submerge the whole political scene in it. We can take the genealogy work you're doing. We can take anything and putting it into the idea of letting what is going to unfold without trying to control what's happening and make it be a certain way. Because then we're only serving ourselves.
I wish you would have told me that before I started all this research.
Why?
I could have done something else, more fun.
Aren't you having fun doing it?
Oh yes, I am. I'm sort of joking. I mean, it's
must be
tragic.
Work.
Yeah, it's tragic to find out what you find out in the end, you know, that we've been basically brainwashed our whole lives.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Thousands and thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's not just the U.S. it's our history.
Yes, I know. In fact, I can tell you where these people came from, so obviously it's there, too. I enjoy the challenge of it because I'm using discernment. You know, the records are not just like right there that you can just open up a book and say, well, nobody ever read this, so let me go through there. I'm finding these things, you know, almost out of thin air. And
so they're coming to you. That's just what I was talking about.
Yes. Yes. Well, we could talk about anything in that light. Let's talk about my bank account that's coming to me.
We like that. Question for you. Have you gotten as far back as the Anunnaki?
Oh, yes. Have I? Oh, yes, definitely.
No, in your work, in your genealogy work, you said, and when I said thousands, thousands of years, you said, I can tell you where these people came from. Have you gotten that far back?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, good.
Yes.
So are you going to publish this?
Yes. There'll be three-part series called The Three Stooges Go to Washington, which comes out next month in The Observer. This month, I did the trailer piece. I've never written a trailer article before. So,
how do you write a trailer article? Kind of like
trailers for movies to advertise
like a snippet.
Them.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a synopsis of kind of what they're going to find, but I didn't really reveal any details other than, you know, I wrote it in a way where you're going to have to read the article.
Sure.
Anyone that sees the trailer is going to want to read the whole article.
I'm sure.
And it's very, very revealing.
Well, this is going to be exciting.
Mm-hmm. So I just brought that up because that happened to me actually last Saturday. I had the most incredible day of research.
Mm-hmm.
And when I hit a puzzle piece, you know, I call it finding the needle in the haystack.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, this haystack goes all the way up to the moon. So you can imagine when you find the needle you're looking for and everything becomes crystal clear at that point.
Mm-hmm.
I had the chills for like 14 hours all day from head to toe.
Oh, I can imagine.
And I just, it wouldn't go away. It was like, okay, you're going to feel good now because you went through all this work and just enjoy the vibration. Oh, man,
yes.
It was phenomenal. I mean, I don't mean to say, oh, man, because you're not a man, but you know what I mean.
Well, that's all right. That's okay. Oh, I'm looking forward to it. That's exciting.
So that's where spirit and mind and intention all are working together. It's
exactly.
It's a phenomenal feeling when you get that click. And you've hit on something. Let's say you're reading someone or you're doing a healing or something along those lines, and
mm-hmm.
and you say the one thing that has been underneath the surface that the other person can't say.
Right.
And you say it and you state that truth, and you resonate from that.
Yes.
Now, I get that all the time. That's my confirmation. The truth.
Oh, yeah, that's mine, too. Yeah, I know just what you're talking about.
Yeah. Well, see, I know it takes one to know one, so.
That happens for me in my readings all the time, especially, it happens a lot, and I am especially aware of it when I'm doing a reading for someone that either I know, you know, in a physical sense, I know them, you know, I see them, you know, day now and then during the day, so that I know a lot about their life, and I don't want to know anything. I just want to go in clear and clean. Or if it's somebody I don't know who has given me this whole scenario about their life, and I can see how caught up in it they are before I do the reading, so I've already got a take on how I feel about it. And when I do the readings, because I get out of the way, but I can hear myself talking, and when I'm doing that, and I hear myself say something, and I get that confirmation like, oh my gosh, this is what it's about, I realize how much it is not part of my own mind thinking.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is not something I ever would have thought of, or that has anything to do with how I know the person, or what I think about the situation. And it's that click, as I call it. The click happens, and I go, oh, my gosh, that's it. And I get confirmation from them on that all the time. So I know that that works. So I know what you're talking about. It's really important. And the thing that I think is so great is that anybody can do that if they'll allow their mind to be quiet long enough and listen, because that has to be what you're doing with this research. You're listening to yourself.
Yes. You know, I uncovered a relative in one of the genealogies. We'll just say that right now because I don't want to blow the whole thing.
Sure.
But I looked at it, and then I found another person with the same name in the same city, and I said, this can't be.
Right.
Not back in that day. That doesn't make
mm-hmm.
sense.
Mm-hmm.
My intuition immediately told me what it was.
Mm-hmm.
But I followed the research path, and I got to this brick wall, and I finally said, just show me where this person is from.
Right.
And I saw the name on a big TV, actually it was like a movie projector, or
yeah.
a movie screen, you know, in the
right.
theater.
Mm-hmm.
And it moved and everything. It came from the background, from this little pinpoint of light, and then it exploded into this big title. And I added the name to the name that came up on the screen, and you should see what I came up with instantly.
Oh.
And it became very clear what went on and what was done, how,
right.
how this person was. So we're talking about people who aren't from this country.
Uh-huh.
And they're running for office. They're not from this country.
Mm-hmm.
So this is very revealing, and it's been pretty well hidden, but not completely. You can't
mm-hmm.
hide the truth. See,
mm-hmm.
and as this is coming through to me too, this overwhelming feeling of light and love came over me too, because there maybe I was helped, you know.
Oh,
that connection was there.
And you can be helped, and you can also be listening to your higher self, which knows all the answers anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Is getting to the point where, you know, where you're silent enough within your own mind, like you said, you followed the regular research path. That's what your mind said. This is the way you do research. And it didn't work. And so then you opened yourself up to what you, capital Y, already knew.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't get what we already know if our mind is busy telling us what we think we know.
Yes, and you know, this is an important to talk about just for another moment here, at least from my perspective, because the listening audience might hear something, and I'd like you to expand on this, that to do genealogy work, if you do it the way most people do, there is a pre-planned path for you to discover who's who.
Mm-hmm.
And in other words, there's a lot of artificial records thrown in mm-hmm. the mix. Names are made up. Birth dates are made up, places are
sure.
made up,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
and we would ask ourselves, why would anybody want to do that? I mean, I would want people to know when my birthday is, or where I was born,
mm-hmm.
or what year, or who my parents were, or who my relatives were, but not these people.
Mm-hmm.
It's a totally different story. They have to hide who they are.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
so we learn a truth. We learn, and it's almost a sad truth. But in a way, mm-hmm. when you figure it out, it's like, yeah, now I see the picture. I see what's
mm-hmm.
going on here.
Mm-hmm.
This is important because it shows the illusion.
Yes.
You see, we are believing in all these illusions, and it just made all the illusions apparent to me in everything. And there are many I'm aware of, as you are, and the listening
audience. Oh, yes.
The material, the money thing.
The money thing, yeah.
And there are even illusions in relationships and education and definitely in religion, tons of them. So the movies is nothing but illusion, with a little bit of truth mixed in.
Right.
Sometimes
right.
it's put right in front of our face. But I'd like you to comment on that, if you would, as far as recognizing, you know, when you come to that place and then you can't go back.
No, you can't. No, you can't. It's one of the things that I feel that if people will take even the first baby step, if they're afraid to go past their conditioning and their programming, the first baby step at looking at how they can open themselves up to information that isn't necessarily what they're used to. And it really is about releasing and letting go of the programming and the quote-unquote book learning and the teaching from religions and the media and schooling that everybody gets that makes them believe that they have to think a certain way, and they don't really know whether any of the things that they've learned are actually true. And that's really what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm doing, a sequence of YouTubes right now, and it's about belief and where your belief comes from, because people have been acculturated to believe that having beliefs is an important thing to do, and that your beliefs are your hope. It's your faith. It's how you and God communicate. And I firmly feel that belief is undermining. Yes, we can believe in something if we want to. And I know that if you believe in something enough, you're actually going to create it. But when people have beliefs that do not support them, and people have beliefs that create a set of circumstances for them that do not allow them to see the possibilities that do exist, then I invite them to release that belief enough so that they have a chance to listen within themselves to any other information that might be coming up. And they always know when this is happening. It's that first little doubt that you have about anything that you hear or you
mm-hmm.
see. That first little doubt, it's actually your wisdom talking to you saying, well, it might not be that way, you know. And then people clamp it down and they shut it down so that they don't allow themselves to open to the realities of other possibilities. And it's huge, because I'm sure that some people listening could be shaking their heads and saying, yes, 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 and agreeing. And so I'm saying, okay, great. Now take something that you think is a given, something that you're so sure of that it's true that you just don't even think about it because you act on it all the time. Take that one apart and find out where you actually began to learn to believe that this was just a given in life. Because there really aren't any.
Yes, you're actually, I'm elated to hear what you're saying, because that this has been my message for a number of years. Actually, the difference, I've even written an essay on that,
mm-hmm.
The difference between belief and knowledge, and the attachment, the ego attaches itself very easily to belief, and it shuns knowledge because it realizes it is its downfall.
Yes.
It works and survives by the illusion,
right,
and through the
exactly.
illusion.
Exactly.
So, I'm happy to hear you say that. You're preaching to the choir, but that's good because you're also...
Well, I'm assuming that some of the listeners aren't in the choir, or if they are, and I love to speak to the choir about these things, because a lot of times people will say to me, you know, just what you said, you're preaching to the choir. Most people know what you're already talking about. Your audience is already online with you. And I go, oh, really? Well, guess what? I can take them offline real fast by asking them to question whether they're really spiritual and what spiritual means to them. Because the venues that I usually end up in and the people I usually talk with and this kind of thing usually tend to be the light workers, the healers, the spiritual, this, that, and all of those words that I get so tired of hearing about. I want to know who these people really are inside of themselves, and they're too busy trying to be the woo-woo New Age person. I can't get there unless they're willing to drop that mask, and all of it is illusion. None of it's
mm-hmm.
real. They're making it up because it makes them feel good. And that's why I keep going back to the ego always wants to feel like it's being, doing the right thing, provided the peer group supports it. And at 61, I've been around this all of my life, and I've watched how people change their ideas about what the correct spiritual methodology of being is today from what it was 4 days ago, depending upon who they've discovered now with what message. So they don't even know what their truth is.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take that idea and you can extrapolate from it and talk about anything, whether it's going to the grocery store or how you raise your kids or politics or religion. It's always the same. And so what does a person need, and this is my question, because for each person it's different, what does a person need to allow themselves to say, I'm going to let go of what I say I believe in, and I'm going to ask myself what I really, really know within myself. And that's when you can begin to hear that voice that we're talking about, because the voice is always there. It just doesn't get a chance to open its little mouth, because people are so busy trying to make sure that their opinion is right based on who's going to hear what they say.
Yeah, we had on this radio show today, and this was interesting because this was on a Patriot Network, we had a conversation about how we recreate ourselves, or how we recreate this situation that we're in on this planet, and make a choice, choose what we would want, and do that working together.
Yes.
And I mentioned to someone, start out by asking yourself the question, when all the money is gone, mm-hmm. and all the material things are gone, mm-hmm. what is left?
Mm-hmm.
And the person said, well, me. And then I said, okay, now the next question is, who are you?
Right.
And who and what do you choose to be?
Exactly.
What is your intention?
Mm-hmm.
And you see, it takes all the power away from those to whom we have given away our power.
Exactly.
That's the thing that we have to wake up to, is that we're not going to find the solution trying to work through that system using those methods, in other words.
Yeah, no, it doesn't work. And I firmly believe that people know that. One of the things that I understand people are, quote-unquote, dealing with right now is the amount of fear that has been projected into the environment in which most people in this country live. And I feel I'm very privileged. I live on an island. We call it the Republic of Lopez. We pretend like we don't belong to America, kind of thing. It's a joke here. But we have a kind of a boundary line that allows us to be in quiet and solitude. And I feel very, very thankful for that. And when I go, I take my little ferry boat and I go over to the mainland to do shopping or whatever, and I'm with everybody there for a while, and I see how much anxiety there is. We only go to little towns. We don't go like all the way to Seattle or some big city mm-hmm. where everything's really moving fast. I realize that people don't even believe that they have the right to take the time to slow down enough to look. That if they don't keep pace with what's happening around them, and they don't keep up with whatever job they have, whatever profession they're in, whatever's expected of them by their family, that they're a failure. So they don't put aside that time. And I've lost clients over this. When I said, I can't work with you unless you make time to work with yourself, and they just say, I can't. And yet they're so unhappy that they sought me out. And yet when it comes to the time where I say, okay, these are the things you're going to need to do, they can't believe that it's possible to do that.
Well, that leads to the next point I wanted to make, and that is, it's that everyone, I say everyone, those that are not awakened, and a good percentage of those who are awakened, are waiting for someone else to do it for them.
Exactly.
There's this dependency on the savior or the government or this big group that will come to their aid, because they are so frightened. I won't use the language. It almost came out. they're very, very frightened. Let's put it that way.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they are.
and there it is again, the fear. You see, the illusion has become so real that they become paralyzed.
Exactly, and they think that all they need to do is call 911 and everything's going to be okay. 911 on the phone. You know, if something happens, you call 911.
Yes.
Back in 2000, I was over in Egypt, and I was there with 18 other people, and we were there for 14 days. It was wonderful, and we had a fantastic man taking us on this wonderful journey. And in the midst of it all, part of the journey included 3 days on the Nile River on feluccas, which are about 14 feet wide and probably another 28 feet long, and the group was divided among three. So there were, you know, six of us on each boat, and we were spread out throughout the Nile, you know, next to each other, sailing down the Nile. And at night we would tie the boats together to make sure that in the dark we didn't get, you know, we didn't lose anybody. And supposedly there was supposed to, and we had wonderful Nubian boatmen, and we had all of this wonderful care that was being given to us for support, and supposedly they were supposed to be awake at night and, you know, taking shifts and things of that nature. Well, the fellows who were supposed to be awake fell asleep, and we ran into a bridge that was under construction that they didn't realize was there because it was under construction. It was a new bridge, and they were used to just being able to sail down this part of the Nile at night just flat out and not have to worry about anything. And when we did, the only thing that saved us from capsizing individually was the fact that we were tied together. There was enough force in the weight of the boats to offset the push from the Nile as it was pushing us into this abutment that was this bridge.
Mm-hmm.
And we were stuck. We couldn't move. We couldn't do anything. And we all woke up. We were all sleeping, of course, crash, crash, bang, bang, and we wake up and all the stuff is going on. And I felt it ripple through the group. No one really said anything to start with. I felt it ripple through the group of, what are we going to do now? And then the realization came to everyone, there is no 911, there is no Coast Guard, there is nothing. We have to get ourselves out of this by ourselves. There is absolutely no way that we can call anyone to help us. There was nobody to call. And it was such an eye-opener for everybody. It was so beautiful. And, of course, the boatmen took the lead, and they showed us what we needed to do. And then, meanwhile, of course, the people who were guarding this construction site came out with guns and started shooting them in the air, which just added a little drama to the whole thing, because they wanted us to go away. Well, then they saw that we couldn't. So then they wouldn't let us leave until it became light. But these boatmen let us help them, and we had to get up on this abutment, and we had to move these big boats around with our hands, with ropes, on our feet, just do it, and get ourselves around to the place where the Nile was actually flowing way at the end, and we could get past all of this in the light. And to those of us on the boat, all of us were kind of aghast at what was happening and doing the very best we could to assist. But what I was watching was the boatmen. They didn't get upset. Nobody was swearing. Nobody was angry. It was just like, oh, well, this is what we have to do now. Because they're not used to having anybody rescue them. Civilization isn't set up that way.
Mm-hmm. Now, you were out there, just on a side note, did you happen to see Osama bin Laden while you were there? Or?
No, as a matter of fact, we invited him to dinner, but he said he was busy. He didn't show up.
I just thought he might have been there, you know, it's since it's so inaccessible, it would have been a good hiding place.
right. No, sorry. But I was just so interested. I liked the feeling of it. I liked the feeling of that self-dependency, of having to figure it out for yourself, rescue yourself, and don't think that you have this whole establishment behind you that is just being paid to come and make sure you're safe just because you've done something dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the atmosphere that we live in the United States.
Yes, it is. Now, I had an incident. It's not as tragic. There were no machine guns or anything like that, but years ago, when I was in Europe, I was doing a music gig, and one of the person that had driven me from the hotel in his car to the place where we were performing decided he was going to go out to dinner with these other people, and he said, "You can take my car and go back to the hotel, or do whatever you like." I said, "Well, I'm just going to go back to the hotel." So I drive about a kilometer, and it runs out of gas.
Uh-huh.
And what are you going to do? There's no gas station. I'm out in the country near this resort area. You know, I'm in the in the Alps.
In
Austria.
Oh dear.
And I was 14 miles from the hotel.
Oh dear.
So I walked.
Right.
It was simple. I just walked.
That's all you can do.
I walked, and when he came. When he came back to the hotel, I said, "Hey, you're going to have to send somebody up to your car with gas. There was no gas in it." But But it was interesting because it was like walking through Transylvania.
Oh, I bet.
You know,
castles
and
bats
and everything, you know. And
oh,
it's in the middle of the night, too. You know?
Yeah, right, exactly. Yeah, and there's nothing else that you can do.
And there's no cars driving by,
yeah.
And you're hearing all these animals running, scurrying around. And, you know, it was interesting. It was definitely a new experience for me.
Well, I think that if we, and when you were talking about, you know, when there's no more money and there's no more this and there's no more material things, if we end up in a situation, and I'm not saying we are going to, but I'm just saying if we end up in a situation where we do not have all of the luxuries that we so take for granted, I feel that people are going to have an opportunity to find out who they are. Because the distractions that are keeping them from going to that place within them will be removed. And yes, they might spend the first couple of weeks thinking they're going to starve to death, but they'll soon find out that they aren't. And that they are equipped to take care of themselves. I think that people right now cannot even begin to fathom what that feels like, by and large. I mean, I'm just talking about your average American citizen. I know that there are exceptions to the rule, and yet, I mean, how many people that go to the grocery store have ever actually butchered an animal or raised, you know, their lettuce or done any of the things that are just common day-in, day-out ways to take care of yourself? They haven't.
And we may be in a situation where even those of us who do know how to do that are going to have to be very careful where we do that.
Oh, definitely. Oh, absolutely. I know. That's why I say I feel very privileged to be on a piece of land that is basically unpolluted and not attached to anything. It's just here, and whatever is here is what is here, and that's what you've got. And I wish I could impart that in such a way that people could feel invited and strongly urged to take a look at lifestyles and where they spend their money and what they support with that dollar. Because every dollar that we spend ends up going to support something that we might not necessarily agree with for good reason.
Yes.
Rather than just blindly walking into the store and just buying whatever is there just because it's the easiest thing to do.
Yes, or even worse, put it on a piece of plastic, you know, for the oil companies.
Yes, I agree completely. It's. I think we're in for some really big changes. I really feel strongly. I'm very glad that you're doing the work you're doing. You're going to be interested in reading it. I wanted to ask you a question, and maybe some of the listeners might be interested in hearing this too. You said you're going to publish this in the Observer.
Yes.
And that's a newspaper.
The Idaho Observer. Yes.
The Idaho Observer. Okay.
Yes, that's a monthly newspaper.
Okay, so those of us who are not in Idaho.
You can go to my website, directlightproductions.com, and click on sponsors, and there is a page there for the Idaho Observer.
Okay.
And it'll take you directly to their site,
uh-huh.
Or you can call. In fact, I'll do a commercial real fast here. You can call area code 208-255-2307. Again, that number is area code 208-255-2307, and ask for Don or Ingrid. Those are the publishers and editors of the newspaper. It's a two-person newspaper as far as the infrastructure of and the machinery of running the paper.
Okay.
But it's contributions of journalists around the country.
Okay.
Who submit, and it's a paper based upon the truth.
Oh, it sounds wonderful.
So it's a monthly paper, definitely worth every penny. And it's not very expensive at all. In fact, I know people that pay more for their daily paper than what this costs, and they don't get any truth in the daily paper.
So why did you choose them? How were you led to them?
Higher intelligence, I guess.
Okay.
not there isn't another paper, maybe the American Free Press probably be the only newspaper that would print it. The truth, because I'm surprised you haven't read my articles, my dear. You must read.
I'm sorry.
You can go to my articles page. There's some mind-blowing research articles there.
I will do that. I will do
that. Knock your socks off. Yes.
Good.
And these are simpler, in a sense, and even more complex because of how these genealogies were put together. They crisscross. You know, there's not a lot of symmetry to them, but they all use the same methods. They lie, cheat, and steal.
Right. Right. I know that.
There's a lot of fiction involved, so you have to figure out in the time period that you're looking at how people got around, and that, that leads you to the path.
Okay.
So
well, I will definitely get a hold of the Idaho Observer people. That sounds like a really worthwhile newspaper.
Oh, it is. And, you know, they expose things about vaccinations and, you know, we're being lied to about what is in the medicines we take and what's in the
food.
Oh,
yes, I know.
They cover all of those topics.
Oh, lovely. Wonderful. Good.
Same,
yeah, we're always looking for more resources like that.
Yeah, same topics we cover here. In fact, they're very big in the Washington area, so Washington State, I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, when you said that, it seemed like I'd seen it somewhere before, and I can't place my finger on where it is, but that's not important. I'll definitely, you know, give them a buzz and get the newspaper. That would be wonderful. And when are you going to publish now?
Now, that'll be coming out. As I mentioned, the trailer is in this this month's issue.
Okay.
And it's just a tease, really, on the story.
Right.
May, June, and July. It'll run in three parts.
Okay.
And it's called The Three Stooges Go to Washington.
That's a great name. That's terrific. What gave you this idea?
The title or the...
No,
the,
you have to do this work.
Again, higher intelligence told me if we're going to change things or if we're going to move out of the matrix, we must understand how the matrix has been constructed.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And who these people are.
Mm-hmm.
I on a higher level, I don't recall coming here to fix a broken world.
Right.
But I do know that my mission is to enlighten people, to awaken people, to heal people, and any of those good things that those of us in metaphysics like to do.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in the process do that to myself.
Of course. Can't do it to one without doing it to everyone.
Yes. So I'm driven to do that, and the universe has responded. And in assisting me, or at least allowing me to see that path, to find the truth, because it's really about the truth.
Yes, it is. And then when you're looking for the truth, you can get away from just what you said, a broken world. You know, I think that so many people think that the world is broken, and it's not. This is what we've created. It's co-created, and we can continue in the co-creation to change it, rather than bemoaning the fact of what is there. And that's what I see in this work that you're doing, that the value in it is saying, okay, here's what's been created, and what do we want to do about it?
Mm-hmm. In other words, what I'm doing is, Tony, is I'm dispelling illusion.
Exactly.
In two words, dispelling illusion.
Good, good. That's lovely. I'm looking forward to it very, very much. And what that does, again, going back to metaphysics, which is my platform, is that it informs the whole, the oneness. Because when one person does something, I call it the divine hologram, it's all impacted immediately by that. So when you publish this, and whoever reads it, every time someone reads it, it impacts the whole dynamically.
Yes.
And even if they don't read it and they don't have the knowledge in their mind, they're impacted vibrationally by the information, which makes them make different choices.
Mm-hmm. And I get responses from some, no one has told me that I'm crazy.
I'm sure not.
you know, some well-known researchers have acknowledged the work. G. Edward Griffin heard about a lot of this, you know, what I had written, which is follow-up to his book, The Creature from Jekyll Island. And he said it's remarkable what the path that I took, because I'm not really stealing anything that anyone wrote.
Right.
I made myself knowledgeable about the subject and said, I'm going to really figure this out and find out how they did this.
Mm-hmm.
How did this come about? How?
And
it took me from the Federal Reserve to Nikola Tesla to Otto Skorzeny, Hitler's former bodyguard, to the Bush family.
Yes.
And it's very compelling and very accurate, too, I would say.
Oh, this is going to be fun. This is going to be fun.
Oh, yes.
I'm in the process of writing a book that has to do with my own knowing about a time in which I lived. And I call them a parallel life because the past doesn't exist. And it's very real to me. It's like it's just right here. And I came by the information much the way you're talking about, through visions that I had. Then I started doing the research, and as soon as I started doing the research, things started to happen, to unfold, without me even doing anything logical to get the information. I would be looking, you know, on the web for something that had absolutely nothing to do with the book, and there it would be.
Yes.
And I think, well, what is that doing on this website? You know, where did that come from? And it's just, it's phenomenal how that works. And I'm really enjoying doing it. It's, as you said, very confirming.
Yes, it's you begin to notice the pattern of synchronicity, too, don't you?
Yes.
When you, though? Yes.
Yeah.
And the things that normally you would take for granted, and it could have been last year or 5 years or 10 years ago.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
You'd say, I would overlook this all the time, because I did.
Yeah,
and it was always staring you right in the face.
Right, exactly. It's kind of like that old adage, you know, if you want to buy a red car, pretty soon all you see is red cars.
Mm-hmm.
When I was wanting to buy a Jeep, this was before I bought my Jeep, this was several years ago, as soon as I made up my mind that I wanted this red Jeep, but I hadn't bought it yet, I was still trying to make up my mind whether I was going to actually do it. Not only did everywhere I go did I see a red Jeep, I saw a red Jeep. Now, we're talking about a Jeep Wrangler, you know, like you take out in the mountains.
Yeah.
A red Jeep parked in front of a dining house I was eating at in Boston.
Huh.
And I was with this friend of mine. We were on a business trip, and I said, Thea, there's a red Jeep parked behind us, behind you. She was sitting with her back to the window. There's a red Jeep parked behind you outside of our restaurant. And she looked at me and she said, would you just buy the thing and stop talking about it? I said, no, I'm serious. Turn around, look. And there was. It's just such a kick. I mean, people think that, oh, well, that was just a coincidence. Well, how many coincidences do you need before you get it that we actually, all we have to do is put our attention on it and we manifest what we need, what we want, what we're looking for. We actually create it. It's there. In the realm of possibilities, it exists. All we have to do is place our attention there.
Now, were you responding to Jeep commercials, or this was just a wish? And this is for the listeners, I'm asking this question.
I was going to buy a new car. This was several years ago. I was going to buy a new car. I needed a new car. My car had gone bye-bye. And so I decided I wanted something with four-wheel drive that would get me around in all kinds of weather and whatever. And so I went to a car lot, just when I started thinking about it, I said, oh, I'll just start looking around. I went to a car lot to look for a four-wheel drive automobile, and I saw a red Jeep. And it was like I fell in love. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And a Jeep Wrangler is small. You can't carry a lot in it. Well, I found out you can carry a lot more than you think, but still, I was thinking of something that would be a little roomier than that. But once I saw it, I just couldn't get it out of my mind. And so I kept looking at other cars trying to say, well, no, that isn't what I'm looking for. I'm looking for something bigger. And everywhere I looked, all I saw was red Jeeps. And I finally gave in. And I bought the red Jeep, and I've had it now for several years, and I absolutely love it.
Okay.
But no, it was one of those things that just popped up.
It came from inside, in other words.
It came, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
It wasn't that you were influenced by something that you were seeing repetitively.
Oh, no, so. No. It came from inside me. And then, just as a little aside, this is a joke, I got a personalized license plate that says Sacred, because my company is Sacred Spaces.
Mm-hmm.
So the license plate says Sacred. Well, I didn't think about the fact that the word red is in there. So people stop me and ask me what the sake before the red means about the car.
Well, it's a sack, you know, it's a sack.
It's a sack red. It's a
it's
little
a sack.
It's
a sack of red.
But one person did ask me if I was sacred or if the car was sacred. So I told them it was both of us.
You should tell them the SAC stands for Stole Another Car.
My other car is stolen, the red one is not. How beautiful.
Well, you see, you're describing the same process, and you can apply this, folks, to anything. It's not just what Tony's talking about and her, you know, the story about the Jeep. You can apply that to absolutely anything you choose in life. But the point is, it doesn't have to be a material thing.
No.
It can be the healing of a relationship, or it can be success in some way, or it can be some trip that you'd like to take, or something you'd like to learn, some way to improve yourself, or maybe to wake up and become conscious.
Yes.
That could be one.
Yes, yes. I have a favorite story about being in a workshop once, and I was teaching a workshop on paying attention to the voice of your soul, which is your heart, and how your heart tells you what you really want. And that if you really, really listen, it will always give you the words you need, the ideas you need, the things that will support you and serve you the most. And that if someone that you're in relationship with doesn't understand that concept and you want to use it, all you need to do is to say to the person, I'm coming to you with an open heart. Will you open your heart to me? And then you can begin a dialogue if that's what you need to do, whatever it is that you're trying to heal or work with. And so there was this woman in the workshop who said, are you sure this works? And she was very serious. And I said, well, it's always worked for me or I wouldn't be teaching it. And she said, well, I'm going to find out. So at lunchtime, she disappeared. And lunchtime finished, and we all gathered again, and she was missing. And she was like an hour and a half late. And she finally came in, and she just said to everybody, because everybody was curious where she was, she said, it works. I did it. I said, what did you do? She said, there has been a person in my life that I absolutely have had more problems with than I can even begin to tell you. And as a matter of fact, this morning before I came to this workshop, we were having quite a disagreement. So I decided to try it. And I went to her on my lunch hour, and I did what you told us to do. And we are friends again. It was so beautiful.
Yeah, that's great.
And it's so simple. I mean, all it is actually letting another person see you. That's all that it amounts to, is to remove the mask and allow yourself to be vulnerable enough that you open your heart to that person or to that situation.
Well, sometimes we don't even weigh the possibilities before we do that or don't do it. We think, well, you know, I mean, this person is so unreasonable, or we had such a bad fight that there's no way to fix that.
Right. And so, or it's never worked before. Yes.
Yes. And and so we are still operating in that same state.
Exactly.
You know, because we're trying to do it on that lower level.
Right.
Where the problem itself existed.
And it's usually fear that keeps us there. It's fear of getting ourselves in that position again that we were in before, whatever the situation is, that makes us feel so uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And when you go into that space within you, as you well know, there is no fear there. All there is an open love for whatever is transpiring. So you don't have to feel, as I like to say, bound up or, you know, constricted in the interaction. You can really stay open to what's happening and constantly stay there within the conversation, the resolution of it.
Yes.
And then miracles happen. And they're not really miracles. It's just, it's really the natural world. But we call them miracles because we've never seen it happening quite that way before.
Mm-hmm. Actually, miracles are a pretty natural thing.
Oh, very natural things. I know.
You know, I shared this on a past show a long time ago. It's not a real long story. I had an NDE experience and came back from it. And I met someone, the wife of a man who was on a waiting list for a heart transplant. And I asked her how her husband was doing. And she said, he's not doing that well. He may not make it through the night. The doctors are very concerned that his heart is just giving out. And he's been on a transplant list for 5.5 months, almost 6 months. And we got 2 hearts in earlier today, and they were bad. One had belonged to a heroin addict and the other to an alcoholic. And the doctor just refused to even consider using them. And you, now you think somebody would provide that information up front, but
yes, that is what I was thinking.
I guess it doesn't work that way. It's sort of like, well, maybe you'll take the floor model, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah, for a reduced price.
Yeah. So I looked at her and I said, well, I've been through quite a bit in the last couple of weeks myself, and I said, God has his hand on my life for some reason. I haven't figured out why, but I'm not concerned about that right now. I'm going to take this walk down the hallway, and I'll be back in 10 or 15 minutes. And before I go to sleep tonight, I'll say a prayer for your husband. What is his name? And she said, Clayton. And I said, okay, I will say a prayer that Clayton gets a heart by morning. And I said, in fact, you'll know if the prayer was answered by noon tomorrow. Those words just came right out of my mouth.
Good for you.
So I did this walk, and I came back, and I got in bed, in my bed, and I shut out the light, and I lay down, and then I remembered I was going to say this prayer. And I didn't want to do it. For some reason, I wanted to do it with the light on. So I got up, turned the light on, and I just said, Lord, the man across the hall from me, Clayton, has been waiting 6 months, or almost 6 months, for a heart. Would you see that he gets one? Thank you. I'm going to bed. In Jesus' name, good night. And I went to sleep. Next morning, they brought me my food. They were getting ready to release me, and they hadn't even told me about that. So I'm going through all these little tests and examinations and answering questions and stuff, and I see the doctor go into the room, and the door closes. He's in there for an hour and a half, comes out, waves to me, walks by, and then about 20 people, technicians, nurses, doctors, all come up, and they're wheeling all this equipment into his room. The door closes again, and he's in there until 12:05. Now, this began at 9 o'clock.
Right,
so
right.
12:05, they come out. They're wheeling him out on another gurney, and they have all this life support equipment attached to him. And the wife comes out and stops right in front of my doorway, pumps her fist in the air with the thumbs up sign, and goes, yeah! And then she just took off. Well, later on, she came up to tell me that he had gotten a heart and that they had performed the surgery. So, now did I do that? Well, I don't know. I think it didn't hurt.
No, it definitely didn't.
And I realized if it was a miracle, that it was a very simple deed to perform. That's the punchline there, is that it wasn't difficult at all.
No, but it's your knowing that if you ask for it, that it can happen. And that's the blessedness of it. It's just simply asking. And then goes back to, have you heard of Abraham? You know, Abraham, the law of attraction?
Yes, yes.
Okay. And that's what Abraham's always saying. All you need to do is ask and put yourself in a state of receiving, and then the universe gives it to you. And the hardest part is the putting yourself in a state of receiving. And that's just what you did. You just asked, and then you said good night and turned out the light and went to bed.
Mm-hmm.
just knowing that you had asked and that that's all you need to do. It's perfect.
Plus,
and then you can
I,
manifest anything.
Yeah, I spoke that word, which you will know by noon. And,
yes.
And I looked up at the clock, and it was 11:55. And
isn't that wonderful?
And I realized then what I had said the next night. I mean, you know, these were things that just were said, and they weren't really thought.
Right, exactly. So you know that you weren't figuring it out, as I like to say.
Yeah.
You were simply saying what was coming up through you. You open your mouth, and the words come out, because that's all you need to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely perfect. You don't have to figure out what you're going to say. You know
yes.
that. You do that with these programs all the time.
Well, yes. So are you saying that I got another $64,000 question right?
Or? You did. Well, you're just ranking up the points there, boy.
I'm up.
You got all
I'm
these gold stars.
That's $192,000.
And you said earlier you wanted to talk about your bank account. Well, we just did.
Yes. Yes. Well, we're out of time. I hate this part of the show when I have to say goodbye. But before you go, leave the listening audience with some words of wisdom. Not that there weren't any during the show, but just encapsulate something that you would like them to ponder or meditate on while you are preparing to come back on the show again.
Okay, I'm going to give the audience a challenge. I want to challenge each of the listeners to, on this very day, whenever you're listening to this, whether it be in the archives or whether you're listening to it on the live or whatever, today, I want you to challenge yourself to do one thing that you have never done before with a totally open heart, absolutely maskless. Let one person in one relationship or situation see you as you know you are and see how that feels for you and for them. Because I'll tell you this, if you do it and you really do it, you'll become addicted to it and then it becomes a habit. It feels so perfect, it feels so right, and it feels so good that you will never want to live any other way. Then you'll always know your truth and hear the voice of your soul speaking to you, because that's what we've been talking about tonight. So that is my challenge to you. And I call it a challenge because I'm saying that you can't do it. That's my challenge. I know you can. Do you have the guts?
Okay. Well said.
Yeah.
Well, Tony, thank you so much for being on Evident Footprints.
You're welcome.
And we're going to have you back again. You know that. I hope.
Oh, I love it. I love talking with you, Don.
Well, you know, we're talking with the listening audience, too.
I know we are.
And as you were saying what you said there, too, what came through is that when we do it for ourselves, we do it for everyone.
Yes.
We strengthen that bond.
Yes, we do.
And we'll find the answers we're looking for. They're staring
Absolutely.
Us right in the face.
Yes.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It was fun, as usual. I didn't crack as many jokes tonight.
I noticed.
But I can. I mean, we can start telling some jokes if you want to close.
I like your jokes. They're very
spontaneous.
I've got
some doozies. I have to tell you some off the air, though.
Yeah, I was going to say. Fry the wires.
I'll save them for another time.
Okay.
They're hilarious, though.
Lovely. Lovely.
All right. Well, folks, you have been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. Our special guest tonight was Tony Elizabeth Sarah Petrinovich, Ph.D., and please visit her website at www.sacredspaceswa.com and also www.angelichuman.com. She's got a great book. I have read it, The Call. It's a wonderful book, and it is really a manual for reaching this state of consciousness that we've been talking about tonight. Excellent book. It's also on my website, directlightproductions.com. You can click there. There's a Here button on there, and it'll take you right to Tony's website. So in the meantime, again, Tony, thank you so much. I look forward to the next time, and I wish all the listeners lots of peace, love, and light, and everybody have a very good night.
Good night.